Hello and welcome to another lockdown episode of In the Frame. Today's guest is Nicholas McLean. So before theatres close, Nick was starring as Bok in the West End production of Wicked. He made his West End debut as the Doctor in the Book of Mormon, and last year he played Gary Coleman in the UK tour of Avenue Q. He's also done lots of other amazing shows regionally and internationally as well. Nick has the most infectious energy and so many amazing stories. He's so much fun, such a delight to speak to, so easy to speak to as well. And it was such a treat to record this and to find out more about his path in the industry and his career. He is amazing. Here's the interview. Nicholas McLean, you're in the frame.
I can't cope. Oh my God, hello!
How are you doing in this mad time?
I mean, it's wild, isn't it? I mean, I remember at the start of this, I was like, oh my God, a nice little cheeky, you know, I was thinking maybe like 4 week break. I was like, oh yeah, some R&R, I'm gonna sleep, I'm gonna rest, I'm gonna catch up on some Netflix. And you know, here we are 3 months in and I'm like, oh, this has been quite aggressive, hasn't it?
I know. Well, that feels like a long time ago now. Well, it was a long time ago now. So what happened that day at Wicked when you found out that basically this was shutting down?
Well, so they just kind of told us, you know, obviously Boris Johnson made his announcement, I think, at like, you know, 5:30, something like that. So people are already, you know, on their way to work, you know. So I think I found out on the Salt Twitter account or something like that, that Salt had closed all the theatres. So I kind of already knew that we probably weren't doing a show that night. So then we were just waiting, and the producers came down and they told us, and they said, guys, you know, we're closing down for Corona, and you know, we'll be in touch, and we kind of all kind of said our goodbyes to each other, and genuinely thinking like, oh great, it's just gonna be like 4 weeks and then we'll be back, you know. Barely took anything home from my dressing room, you know, my blender was there, I've not been able to make one of my ginger shots in 3 months. I'm livid, absolutely fuming, but yeah, genuinely. So I was really, you know, because I think they did say that they were enclosing it for 4 weeks, or maybe I remember seeing when Broadway shut down, they were like, we're shut down for like a month or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's no time at all. You know, that's just a little bit of respite. And and yeah, here we are 3 months later and we're still inside, essentially.
But you have been busy. And I saw you said something actually that was really nice on Twitter. I think you were saying how it's amazing that lots of fantastic opportunities has come out of lockdown, because you have. You've been singing in concerts and you're doing this thing at the moment with new grads and doing lots of interviews and doing lots of stuff. So you have kind of kept yourself busy. People know what you're up to.
I have. I've run myself ragged. I tell you, I have, but it's been so exciting. I mean, I sang in a concert with Christina Bianco, who's incredible. I recorded a song with Alice Fern and a pal of mine, Scott Hunter, and Dom Hartley Harris. And like doing all of these things that, you know, you'd never be able to do, because you'd never be able to get all of these people in the same room at the same time or for everyone to be available. So on that, in that sense, you know, everyone's free for the most part. So it's been really exciting. And obviously I did, Spotlight on the Future, which was where I sang with a graduate, Amelia Atherton, who is incredibly talented. And it was such a pleasure to take part in that. And they're raising money for, you know, to support everyone who's kind of out of work at the minute. And so it's been a really fruitful time, actually. And I think that's how I'm, you know, still finding some joy and smiling.
Good. That's really important. I want to, I love following you on Instagram. I think there's like three amazing things that we always get. We get amazing riffs. There's always incredible vocals happening and sneaky bootlegs that you're posting. B, we get the best cocktails and the best alcohol recommendations. You literally could have a different career as running some sort of cocktail company. And then C, we get the cutest kind of childhood footage and childhood photos. And I cannot deal with some of that stuff that you post. So, I mean, I want to ask all about riffing and all about cocktails later. But I want to start off with this childhood period. Because what were you like when you were a child? Were you this stagey child? Were you obsessed with theatre? Did you know this is what you wanted to do? Like, if we'd have met each other when we were kind of six, who would I have met?
I was an absolute tyrant as a child, actually. I was absolutely awful. I was off my rocker. I hated authority. Like, I had to be in charge. I was a mean child, essentially.
Oh my gosh.
But that said, I did have a real love of Calamity Jane. It was like my favorite thing to watch. Oh, I rinsed that DVD inside out, I think, to the point where my mum hid it at one point. And then I think I moved on, and then I was watching Chicago all the time. So those were like the two things that I was watching all the time.
They're responsible.
Yeah, exactly. But then I wasn't, you know, I kind of found it all a bit later on. I'd say probably like at the age of maybe 11, 12, something like that. I really decided that I wanted to do this as a career when I was in secondary school, and my secondary school, Kidbrook School, had an incredible drama department, and we got to do some incredible things. We took plays to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. We performed in professional venues across London and the country. So we did a lot of things at Greenwich Theatre, Riverside Studios in Hammersmith. So we got given so many opportunities, and I was like, oh, this is fun. I think I could be good at this. And so that's kind of how that progressed, I guess.
And then when it came to being like, right, I'm going to do this, did you have people who could give you advice? Because a lot of the time, like, school teachers and lots of people aren't able to give you the correct advice. And there's all these drama schools, so they're all really flashy, but you don't actually know the details. And it's really hard to sometimes see what makes each one different and which one's right for you. Like, how did you end up in Mountview? How did you know that was the place for you to go? What happened?
So I'm quite an organised person, and it's one of my favourite things to do is like organise things. So I organised myself to go and watch all of the third year shows at drama schools, and I think I remember seeing...
Oh my God, that is true dedication. That is absolutely next level organisation.
So good. And I think I went to watch a couple of Mountview shows way back when. I think it was Steel Pier that they did, and something else I can't remember. And at the time I was being taught by a couple of people from Mountview, actually. Stephanie Trott, who ended up going in to be the standby Tracy in Hairspray. And another girl called Sophia Amato, who was amazing. And we had workshops at this part-time drama school I went to called Step Up with George Yeo, came in whilst he was in Wicked. So he went to Mountview as well. It was really... Mountview was kind of always on my brain. And then, obviously, I auditioned for everywhere, I think, the first year. And I was like, I really like Mountview. And I got a recall, and then I didn't get in. And I was like, you know, this just doesn't sit right with me. So I actually wrote them a letter and told them that they'd made a massive mistake and they'd missed out. And they called me back in to audition again that year. And then I actually did end up getting in, which is, I mean, it's madness. And I don't know who I thought I was. But
oh my God, that's the best thing ever. What did you, when you went back into the audition, did they address the fact that you'd written this letter, or did you go in, was it like just a normal audition?
No one really talked about it. No one really spoke about the fact that I'd kind of told them that they were missing the next big thing. We just kind of let it go. But I do remember this. I'm going to say it. I don't care. So after this, I go to this recall, blah, 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 and then I don't hear anything again. And then they call me back in once more for a private audition with the head of acting. And she's like, we just don't know if you can act. And so I had this private audition with her, which was absolutely hilarious. It was so bizarre. But you know what I mean? It worked out in the end, didn't it? You know, here we are.
Absolutely. You're an amazing Mountview graduate. I'm sure they're very proud and always posting about your success. And then this is a really geeky question. And literally, I'm just thinking, because yesterday I did the West End Frame Show with Kirk Jameson. He went to Mountview with Alice Fern. And he was talking about how on their first day at drama school, you know, how everyone gets up and has to sing. And he said that Alice Fern got up and sang. And she did the worst things I could do from Greece. And everyone was like, oh my God, why are we even bothering? This girl's insane. And I've heard other people at Mountview talk about that kind of first day when everyone sings. Did you do that? Did that happen your first day? And what did you say?
Ever wondered what it takes to make it in the movie business? Peel back the curtain with 4-6 Success Filmmaking. 4-6 Success Filmmaking is where filmmakers share their stories and the secrets.
It's beyond competitive out there.
There have been movies that it's taken me 10 years to get made.
Don't wait to create. Like, you've got to just keep making stuff.
Tune in to 4-6 Success Filmmaking for your dose of cinematic realness, direct from the voices that have lived it.
I did, and it's actually quite a funny story. Well, I say it's a funny story, but again, it's just me being an absolute tool. But basically, the song at the time for boys was Goodbye from Catch Me If You Can, and everyone was singing it. And and I'd heard like 3 people sing it that day already. And I was like, right, here I am, you know, like first day. And I'm like, right, I need to make my impression. I need to make a stamp. So I go over and I'm like, do you know what? I'm not even going to do the build up. I go over to the pianist and I'm like, just start from here. And off I go. And I'm, you know, singing at the top of my lungs and it's fine. It went fine. And then, but the thing that made everyone howl at the end is that I did this thing with my hand to bring the pianist off at the end. And I don't know if you've seen any of the video. Well, you were saying you have some of the videos I've posted of like me doing like silly things during lockdown. But like I'm quite percussive with my body when I sing. And I think someone commented and you're like, it's so funny how you're like, you've embraced, you've got like your alphabet arms, but you're also kind of also the conductor. And so I'm kind of embodying all of the jobs in one.
Yeah, you were in charge on that first day. Yeah. You're like, here I am. Take that, pianist.
Literally.
And then what, those 3 years, did you love your time at drama school? Was it really hard? Were you in this bubble? Were you thinking about the industry and what you wanted to do? Like, how was that time?
I was actually quite laid back about the whole thing. I don't, possibly too laid back, I don't know, but I think there were two kind of scales of people. There were people who were taking everything so, so seriously and ended up burning themselves out. And then there was kind of like me somewhere a bit less stressed out by the whole situation, because I was just like, well, we're here now, and you know, you have to make the most of it, because I mean, it's such a fantastic time and you could miss out on all of the fun if you were just, you know, focusing on, you know, doing all of the mountain of work that you've been given. Of course, you know, I'm doing the work, but you know, I'm taking little shortcuts here and there. And this is, again, this is another one of my kind of one of the things I did at college that, you know, when we meet up with people, they're like, I can't believe you did this. So I'm going to, this is a first that I'm actually revealing to the world. But so in our second year, we had this project that we were doing with one of the acting teachers, and we were meant to write a monologue about a character from the news, just like someone who'd been in the news at the time. So I didn't do it because I ran out of time for whatever reason. And so I decided to recite With You from Ghost as a monologue. So this is happening. The whole class is in fits of hysterics. I do this thing where if I'm trying not to laugh, I kind of start to cry. So then I've got tears streaming down my face. At the end of the term, I got the highest acting mark I've ever got for that performance.
Stop! Stop!
Yeah, yeah. I feel awful, but...
I picked up your shirts this morning.
Literally, I did it and everyone started losing their minds. It was, yeah.
Oh my God, that is ridiculous. That, and at this time, were you... I have some friends who went to Mount View and, you know, people meet friends, and everyone kind of always says about you how you loved Wicked and you absolutely adored Wicked and you were always singing it and you were obsessed with it. So were you this massive theatre, stagey fan person at this point? When did that... how did that come in to everything?
Do you know what? I don't really know. I think Wicked was a massive game changer as a show anyway. I think it was... you know, before Hamilton came along, obviously, I think Wicked was the last kind of massive mega hit musical that...
everyone knew every lyric before it opened its doors to its first audience in London.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think I remember going to see the show, and actually we can backtrack a bit, because I at my high school, I was on the newspaper, and I managed to blag myself press tickets to Wicked, to Lord of the Rings, to a couple of other shows. So
you
I knew what you were doing, babe. I actually ended up interviewing a couple of people as well. So I interviewed Simon Lipkin at Avenue Q for the magazine, and I interviewed Kerry Ellis at Wicked actually. And there is a recording of me singing Defying Gravity to Kerry Ellis in her dressing room somewhere. that maybe I'll release at a later date.
Yes, please.
So yeah, I guess it just kind of grew from there, and you know, there was so much good stuff out there, and you know, I just loved it. I feel like most of us do you know what I mean?
Totally. But I think you do get some people who almost because they're so certain of becoming their career, or it's their career in their life, that they need that separation. But I think there are other people who just live and breathe it and love it, and I love that, because that's what I'm like. You know, I love theatre, and I love that I get to do some work within the theatre industry and bits and pieces. It's the best thing ever. It's my passion.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I get ripped a lot for it, but I'm like, do you know what, I love my job, I love what I do, and you know what I mean, I'm happy, you're happy, we're all happy, let's mind our own business, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally, literally, yeah, absolutely. And obviously you have this incredible voice. I mean, I'm sure we'll be talking, we'll see, like riffing and singing Gary Coleman and female keys and all these crazy things. You have an amazing, amazing, amazing voice. Did you always have this big voice? Were you always doing crazy things with it? Or is that something that you learned later? Like, how did you discover it?
I don't know, actually. Again, I think it just kind of happened organically, I guess. Obviously I was doing like all this stuff at my part-time drama school, but I was never really one of the singers there. Like, I was always quite loud.
Really?
You know, I was a loud voice. Yeah, but I guess, you know, I was always trying to keep up with, you know, the latest, you know, trends in terms of what everyone was singing. And you know, sometimes that was, you know, Elphaba's songs, or do you know what I mean? So I've put my voice through a lot, and you know, touch wood, it has managed to stick around and, you know, get itself quite strong. And I remember when I was doing Mormon, we used to have some crazy nights out, and my favourite thing to do on a night out is kind of compete with the sound system. So, you know, it, like, my voice has truly been through a lot, and it's still with me today. So I am really, really lucky about that. But I just love to sing, and, you know, you just play around, and yeah.
Do you feel like it's still changing and developing, and, or are you able to, are you quite trusting? You're like, I know it's there.
I did have a bit of a little mind issue with it, kind of in the very early stages of touring Avenue Q. Obviously, you mentioned I was singing all the songs in the female key. So my voice started to get very, very tired. And I was like, oh, God, this is not ideal. We're only like, you know, a couple of weeks into this tour. How are we going to do this? And I just had to have a little chat with myself and just be like, you know what? You'll either be able to do it or you won't. And then you'll have a couple of days off and then you'll be fine. And I just had to kind of keep reminding myself of that, because I was kind of, you know, I think it's really important to have a great work-life balance. And, you know, at the start of the tour, I was kind of hibernating. Literally, I would go home immediately after the show. I'd be silent. And you know, I was kind of missing out on the best bits of being on tour. And so, yeah, I had a chat with myself and I was like, you know what? No, you need to embrace this opportunity. And the more I stopped caring about it, the easier everything became.
Yeah. That's so interesting. A lot of people have been saying things about how half the challenge is mental and the basics of just of breathing, and you know, it's everyone's focusing on, can I hit a top F today, or can I do this today? And it's actually, no, it's like, am I okay? Am I looking after myself? Am I checking in? Am I, what's my mental approach to this?
That's it. I mean, the thing is, you're never 100%, let's be honest. Like, you're always, you know, a little bit tired because, you know, you've done something over the weekend, or, you know, you've got a little bit of a cold, or, oh, you've got, do you know what I mean? There's always, you're never going into, well, I mean, I speak for myself, and I'm sure many other people, because I've had this conversation with them, you're never 100%, and if you are, great, but, you know, you're always battling something. And so you just, you do the best that you can that day. I think I remember, was it Idina Menzel that said, if I hit 60% of the notes or 70% of the notes, I've done my job or something like that. And and everyone ripped her for it. But, you know, I understand what she's saying. Like, you go in and you do your job. And the beauty of live theatre is it's going to be different every day. You're not going to place a note the same every day. You're not going to say the line the same exactly every day. Do you know what I mean? We are growing and we're changing and, you know, one day to the next. So I think you do have to cut yourself a little bit of slack and just be like, I gave the best version of me today.
Totally. Yeah, totally. And then being, you know, such a passionate theatre fan and someone who loves all things staging, do you think of that side of you when you're ever performing? Do you think, you know, when you're in a show like Wicked, you know that there are going to be people there, and that seeing that show is going to be almost life-changing or going to be really moving, and they're going to see so much themselves in these different characters, and then they're going to come up and say hi after the stage door. It's like that, you know what it's like to be on that other side, you know?
Yeah, I do. And the times that I think about it the most are when I'm feeling the most tired. So whilst we were doing Avenue Q, actually, we had a crazy tour schedule where we do kind of like a back-to-back Friday, Saturday. And it was like five and eight or 5:30 on a Friday. And then you'd be back in for 2:30, 7:30 on Saturday. Did I say that right? Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
Anyway, blah, blah. Yeah. So those were the hardest times where you just had to think, do you know what? Someone's watching this for the first time, or someone spent, you know, so much money to see this. And this is like, this is their weekend. This is their experience. And because that's what you need to get you through some of the time, because of course you're exhausted. Do you know what I mean? You're traveling across the country and, you know, you're putting so much energy into this show, and we all get tired, and, you know, that's okay. That's okay to get tired, but that's a really nice way to think, and suddenly I found the energy and off we go. And normally once the show started, it's kind of like a roller coaster. I used to say this thing at work, I'd say buckle up for safety, and it was like, well, off we go. And, you know, once it started, you're joining a ride in progress. Here we go.
So we were already jumping around all over the place, but that's what this is all about. So you're back up to, you're at Mountview and you graduate, and then what was it like going from that bubble to suddenly being in the big wide world, being in that, was that like a reality check, or did you feel like you're really ready and you're really hungry for it? Was it harder than you thought it was going to be? How did you deal with that?
So I was really lucky, actually. I had two jobs lined up to go straight into when we finished. So we at Mountview, when I was there anyway, we had our showcase in like March or April, something like that. And then once you'd signed with an agent, obviously you were allowed to start going out to auditions and things like that. So luckily I signed with an agent straight after showcase. And I had my first two auditions. I managed to get the jobs, which was unreal. It was crazy. But it was The Tale of Mr. Tumble, which was going to be at the Manchester International Festival. Then I went, after that, I went straight to do Sister Act at the Gordon Craig in Stevenage. So it was kind of a massive baptism of fire, actually. It was, you know, saying goodbye to all my pals on Sunday. We did this, we went bowling. We hired out a bowling alley and it was really, really lovely. And I was like, guys, I must go home because I'm in rehearsals tomorrow at, you know, 9:00. So for me, it was kind of a nice transition because it was just like, okay, I'm just going into rehearsals for something. And it didn't really feel too different, you know, because at that point we'd done 3 third-year shows and showcase. So I was kind of used to being in rehearsals. And then it was actually what hit me once the two jobs were done was the, oh God, what do I do? I've got all of this free time and no purpose. And I got really down, actually, because I was like, I don't know how to schedule my own life anymore. Do you know what I mean? It was wild. And so I just had to kind of, again, have a little chat with myself and say, come on, you've got this. And, you know, I got a job. I think I went, I don't know where I went to work. I think I went back to work front of house at the London Palladium, I think. Yes, I think so. Yeah, this was for Cats 2.0, which was Kerry Ellis, I think. Was it Kerry Ellis? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, Kerry.
It was Kerry Ellis, Beverly Knight.
Second time it went to Palladium, it was Beverly Knight.
Beverly Knight, yes, it was Beverly Knight, which was amazing. Like, she was a star. So I was there and I loved my time there. There were, you know, some really close friends of mine who I still chat with now. So, I was there and kind of rebuilding this new version of life and, you know, taking ownership of my own time. It took a while to adjust. But, you know, if you've been in a bubble for 3 years, of course, it's going to take you a while to adjust to a new way of life. Just little things like, you know, you're so used to all of your friends living within walking distance. And now suddenly it's like an hour commute across London to try and meet up with them and things like that. So it was all a bit much, but we made it through.
Oh, absolutely. Live to tell the tale. And then some show called The Book of Mormon came along, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember... I'm really scared to talk about this because in case you hated it and in case you hate me, but I remember when there was never like a proper press release that went out when you were taking over as a doctor, and this was in the olden days of Western Frame, when Western Frame was, you know, like breaking the theatre news, and we kind of found out that you were going in and you were taking over as a doctor, and I think it's the most controversial headline I've ever written in my journalism career. And the headline was, "He's got maggots in his scrotum. Nicholas McLean joins the Book of Mormon." And I was then so scared after I posted it. I was like, oh my gosh, what if he is livid?
No, oh my God. It was my favourite thing. Actually, do you know what's even funnier? I have got the screenshot of that article saved in a folder somewhere on my computer to frame eventually and put in my house because I loved it. Oh my God, 100%. I loved it. And it's, again, all my friends laugh at me because they're like, why can't you ever like just join a show like a normal person? Do you know what I mean? You have to go in and make a scene and, you know, with your personalized press release and blah, 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 blah. So I loved it. I was like, great. Like, my phone was going crazy. I was actually out at a friend's birthday. I think we were at the fun fair at the time or something like that, and suddenly my phone started like going mad because I actually didn't know when the news was going to come out. And yeah, my phone went crazy. It was mental. It was crazy. But I was so excited. I actually watched the open dress rehearsal of Mormon. What was it, 2012? I think so. Yeah, I think it was 2012.
I think it was 2012 or 13, but don't quote
something,
me.
Something around there. I watched the open dress rehearsal and I sat there and I was like, I want to be in that show. I need to be in that show. And I think it was the first audition. This was one of the early auditions I had at Mountview. They sometimes submitted you for auditions. So I went in to audition for it. And Rebecca Jewell, our industry liaison, got me some feedback from the casting director, which was Natalie at Pippa's office. And it was such lovely feedback, but I was like, oh, I didn't get the job. And I was really disheartened because I was like, I really want to be in the show. And then I was like, I think I auditioned for it again another time. And then the audition came through for the time I eventually got it. And I wasn't free. I'd booked a holiday. I was going to Verona to see a friend in her show. She was touring Italy. So we'd booked a holiday, me and a couple of friends, to go to Italy and have a lovely time and drink, you know, €1 Aperol Spritz. And so my agent phones me and says, hey, you've got an audition for The Book of Mormon. And I had to say, I've booked a holiday because I'm really about, you know, owning your time and making time for yourself. And so I was like, I'm going to go on the holiday. And luckily they managed to reschedule the audition. So I flew back from Verona, went straight to the audition with like my suitcase and my, you know, my supplies of Aperol. And then walked in and everyone was like, what are you? Why have you got all of this stuff? And I was like, I've just got off the plane. Don't make a scene. And got the job and I was so excited. It was a very, very intense rehearsal at an audition process. I think I was like, went back in every single week for like 6 weeks, and every time I was meeting someone different, and yeah, it was a lot. And I thought there was a final, and then there was another one, and yeah, and then I remember getting the call to say that I was on hold, and I was like, and I've heard horror stories before of people being on hold and then not getting it, and I was like, oh, I'm on hold, this is so exciting, but I don't want to get too excited, but I'd already start expending the money, and it, you know, it was a lot. And then my agent at the time sent me a text message one day and was like, oh, are you busy? And at this time, I was so unbusy. The text message came through. I'm sure it was like, you know, it had gone midday and I was definitely still at home in my bed. I don't think I'd showered, in my pyjamas. And he was like, oh, can you pop into the office for a bit? And I was like, oh, God, I'm getting dropped. And, you know, I was so dramatic. And then I walked into the office and he was like, oh, yeah, 1 second. He was just like doing some bits. And and then we were talking about, I'd had another audition at the same time, which was for Panto, I think, in like Swindon or something. And he was like, oh, I did find out from blah, blah, blah that you got the Panto in the end. And then he said, but I think you'll want to do this instead. And then he played I Believe and I lost my mind. I was screaming at the top of my lungs. It was a sight to behold.
Oh my gosh, it really was. This was still quite early days to Book of Mormon. It's still massive now, but it really was. In these first few years of its run, it was such a big deal, wasn't it? Everyone really, really, really wanted to be part of it. So, and then you went in, like you said, you went in, it wasn't like a cast change, was it? You kind of went in your own entity at your own time. Was it intimidating? Your West End debut, it's a big deal. And it's a lovely track, a lovely role.
It is.
Did you love it? It was the best thing ever? Or were you like, oh my gosh, how is this happening? What am I doing?
It was quite daunting. I have to say, it's not how I thought I'd be making my West End debut at all. Because obviously, you know, you think, oh, West End, you know, you've got a lovely rehearsal, you've got 4 weeks of rehearsal and blah, 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 blah. I had 2 weeks of rehearsal basically by myself. It was just me and the dance captain. And then, you know, a couple of swings here and there occasionally. And then I think I had one dress rehearsal with the full cast and then I was on. And I remember at the end of my first week, I think, you know, I left on the Friday afternoon and I walked to Leicester Square because I was rehearsing in the theatre. And I just walked to Leicester Square and I sat down and I picked up my phone and I phoned my friend Heba and I just started crying down the phone. I was like, I can't do this. There's so much to do and I've only got a week left and I'm not good enough to do this. And I was literally having a massive breakdown.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, she kind of, you know, told me to get a grip, essentially. And I went back and I did the second week of rehearsals and it was fine. And then the Monday comes and I'm doing this dress rehearsal. We did the dress rehearsal at like 2 o'clock and then I was opening in the evening. Mm. And the dress rehearsal happened and I just made loads of silly mistakes. And I was like, they're going to tell me I can't do the show tonight. And this was actually the most stressful thing because I was like, I've got so many people watching tonight and they're going to be like, why weren't you on? So there's so much was going through my mind. But they didn't. They just gave me a couple of notes here and there and that was it. And so I went and had like a little break and I went to Sophie's Steakhouse to get some food. And I sat at the table and basically didn't actually order anything, I don't think. I just sat there and I had a friend that was working there, Christian, who came over to me and was like, baby, are you okay? And I was like, I don't think I am. And it was a roller coaster of, you know, a time. And yeah, it was a lot, but it was great. The show is fantastic and they do a really good job of hiring the most incredibly talented but also hysterically funny people. And so, you know, once I kind of got to grips with what I was actually doing, I had a whale of a time and I would walk into the building and just laugh from the moment I walked in until the moment I left. It was a barrel of fun.
And you were there for a while? You were there for like a year and a half? Almost.
Yes,
a couple of years.
18 months, yeah.
And so that's the longest you've done a show still. So did you enjoy that, having that security for that amount of time? And did it get hard? Did it kind of ever get stale? Like, because it's such a mad show with a mad audience. I imagine that kind of keeps it fresh.
It does. It really does keep it fresh, actually, is the audience reactions. I think, you know, it's very, very exciting to see how this bunch of people are going to respond to the show. I think, you know, one of my favourite bits of the show is doing Hasidiga and seeing people get up and walk out is so entertaining. Yeah. Because, you know, lots of people come to see the show and don't actually know what it's about because, you know, they've been brought tickets as a present, or, you know, they think that it's going to be, you know, a lifestyle accurate retelling of the Book of Mormon. And unfortunately, it's not.
That is one thing it's not, yes.
That's one thing it's not. And even though, you know, the Mormon Church do support the show, you know, it's not for everybody. So, yeah, the audience reactions make it, but likewise, the cast make it as well. And, you know, I was lucky enough to work with a few different Prices and Cunninghams and Nabalungis and McKinleys. And it just, you know, the different energy that they bring to the show as well, it keeps it fresh and keeps it going. And we had some fantastic covers as well. So it was always exciting. And my favourite thing, was, you know, if ever we didn't have, you know, enough people, I'd sometimes get like an extra line here or there. And that was always my favourite thing. And the dance captain would give me the extra lines because he knew that I was going to like go hell for leather with them. I loved it. I loved it so, so much.
What were these lines? What were your favourite extra lines to get? And the lines in that show were so funny.
It was, So it was in the final scene where we've kind of all done whatever's happening. And Nabalungi, we have been shown another way, and something along those lines. And you know, there was something with me and the general, and my friend Rodney was on for the general that day, and we did a little practice, and we both just laughed in each other's face, and we were like, okay, that can't happen in the actual show. So it was good that we did the practice because it was a riot, but God, we had fun.
I had Asmaret Gabrin-Cahill on this podcast a few weeks ago. She did Nabalungi in London, but she was in the original ensemble, and she created the line, "What the f*** is a steak knife?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and her name is in the script. Her name is the character is now called Asmaret.
Yeah, she said that they named the character after her. Thank you very much. Yeah, she said that. I loved that. I absolutely loved that.
She was so good in the show, by the way. She left just before I started.
I never got to see her in Mormon.
The clear tone as she belted Salt Lake City was unreal.
I mean, I saw her in Dreamgirls many a time, and she can sing for days, and we could go on. It looks like when you left Book of Mormon, you did so many kind of these, just jumping from these little like other really cool little jobs, like you did South Pacific concert, you did some new kind of from page to stage stuff, which is obviously a different world from being a Book of Mormon. But what one that really jumps out to me, and I'm like, what on earth was this? This looks incredible. Well, it looks insane. You did Mamma Mia, the immersive experience. And where was this? It was in an arena somewhere.
Oh my God, yeah. So after the Book of Mormon, I actually retired, which is what everyone jokes about now as well.
You retired?
Yes, I retired. So, you know, I was like, you know, I think that's me done. I think I was, you know, I'd done what I'd come here to do and I enjoyed it, but I was quite tired by the end. And so, yeah.
I love your impression of yourself. And then I thought, I didn't know.
Literally, I'm a mess. So yeah, I retired, and then eventually, obviously, I got the performing bug again. And yes, Mamma Mia, the immersive experience was in Abu Dhabi at the Do Arena. And honestly, I have never had so much fun. We had maybe like 3 or 4 days to put the show together. So we did a couple of days of rehearsal in London. And then off we popped to Abu Dhabi for, you know, 3 or 4 days. And it was so much fun. The whole atmosphere was truly incredible. We're in Abu Dhabi. It's boiling hot. The hotel's stunning. You know, we had a great time. The show was so much fun. And then it was kind of like this festival as well. So once we were... And here's the funniest bit. So I actually ended up kind of presenting the festival as well. It was so random. And I'll have to send you the picture of me in my pepper wig.
Please.
Because it's really a sight to behold. but yeah, it was just one of those things that I saw... someone post that they were auditioning for it on Facebook, actually. And I was like, oh, that sounds like a bit of me. I was so down for trouble at that point, obviously, because I'd been in one place for so long. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, yeah, get me some travel. Get me on a plane. So yeah, I was very, very excited to do that. And I did that with Ellis Dackham, who ended up being on Avenue Q with me as well, which was really cool.
Oh, nice. And then, well, then it was then the following year, it was when you went into this crazy time of doing Avenue Q and then straight into Cinderella and then straight into Wicked. So, I mean, you hadn't had, before coronavirus, you hadn't, literally haven't really had a day off for kind of years, basically.
Andrew, it was quite an aggressive time, I won't lie. So we finished the year of 2018 doing the Pied Piper in Didcot and Stevenage. And we all know those Christmas shows have quite a relentless schedule. So I was already tired and then went into, missed the first couple of days of Avenue Q rehearsals because I was still doing the Pied Piper. So kind of came into Avenue Q a little bit late, so I had to play catch up. And then obviously we're on this, you know, lovely tour that kept extending. And we're like, oh my God, this is amazing. Let's keep the money coming in. It was great. And we had so, so much fun. And the cast were incredibly talented. And then it at one point it was looking like we might be transferring into town and we were also right. very, very excited. But then unfortunately that didn't come to fruition, which was really sad because it would have been lovely to do the show in town. Because I think it's definitely got a life. There's so many people, you know, who didn't get to see it when it was in town the first time because, you know, they were
overdue,
living.
We returned to London. Totally.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a shame. But then I am. My friend Shell was the assistant director on Cinderella and they couldn't find a Buttons. So she texted me and she said, hey, babe, are you interested in being Buttons in Cinderella? Do you want to come in an audition? We're holding auditions in London on this day. And I was like, I think I can get there, actually. I'm getting a train from King's Cross at blah, 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 blah. So I went into this audition at like the crack of dawn. I'm sure it was like 10 o'clock in the morning. And they wanted Buttons to sing Somebody to Love in the show. So like I knew I had to take something of that ilk to the audition. So I think I took I Want to Break Free and I've been waiting. And I go in and I'm like, oh, which one do you want me to sing? And I think I ended up singing both. And let me remind you, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. So that was should be illegal, but hey ho, I did it to myself. So anyway, managed to get that and I had the best time working with the team at the Mercury. Honestly, they are so, so lovely. Ryan McBride and Tracy Childs are just, you know, they're so good. And obviously the Mercury is under renovation, so we did the show in like a purpose-built tent outside.
I didn't realise that.
Yeah,
wow.
And it meant that we couldn't fly any of the set in, so they had to get very, very creative. And, you know, the most incredible thing about it was, you know, we didn't have the golden carriage or the pumpkin carriage or whatever it's called. Our Cinderella took flight. So she took flight on a swan. She took flight on a swan and it was incredible. The lighting designer was the guy that designed Six. So he did some incredible lighting trickery and, you know, it really looked incredible. I don't know if there are some videos floating around somewhere. I'll send them to you. But it looks incredible. And we had the most amazing time. And again, the cast was just full of the most talented people. Genevieve Nicole, who has worked non-stop since the day she was born. Deborah Tracy was our fairy godmother. She was incredible. It was, you know, it was just, yeah, I felt very, very fortunate to be there.
But at this point, it had already been announced, right, that you were taking over as Brock and Wicked. Didn't that get announced like the previous October or something? It was a massive time frame of it being announced to then you actually going in.
Yes, it was. Yeah. So I think it got announced. Yeah. Sometime in October. I was still in Avenue Q. I was actually floating in the middle of the Irish Sea when the announcement came out.
What were you doing? Why were you floating?
Just on my holidays in the middle of the sea. No. So we took Avenue Q onto the Stages Fest cruise. Yeah. So we were there doing the show on the ship and they did the press release while I was at sea. So I didn't even know it had come out. And
how stagey you were living your stagey dreams.
Yep. So then we kind of docked and my phone was going crazy and I was like, what has happened? And then people were like coming up to me in the breakfast hall and were like, oh my God, you're going to be in Wicked. And I was like, what's happening? And, you know, I didn't really have time to think about it because we were doing our shows that day. We had tech in the morning and then we did three shows of Avenue Q that day on the ship. So I really wanted to be like, oh my God, yeah, it's happening. I'm like, it's so exciting. But I was literally like, I don't have time. I don't have time. I didn't have time to respond to a single message. I didn't have time to really speak to anyone that day until we were done and it was the evening and we'd done the shows. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, it's happening. And it was crazy. And just the week before I got on the ship, I'd just been for a costume fitting as well. But there's always so much cloak and dagger around this stuff. So literally I couldn't tell anyone. I was sworn to secrecy.
But what was it like when you found out that you'd got that role? Had you auditioned for it before? Was this your first time? Because obviously, as we've been discussing, this was a big deal. This was a massive show for you, a show that you loved. So to find out that you're going to be in it must be really a lot to compute.
Yes, yeah, it was a lot. So I knew they were auditioning for Bok, but I already knew that they needed Bok to start in November. I think it was like November the 18th or something. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I was already committed to doing Cinderella. So then I remember I got this call from my agent at the time. And they were like, where are you? Can you talk for a second? I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I can talk. They were like, they want to see you for Bok and Wicked. And I was like, oh no, I can't do it because of the dates. And, you know, apparently that was fine because they had a new plan and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, went in, auditioned, you know, no, I did a self-tape first. I did a self-tape and sent it down. And then went in and they were filming things and we were sending things to America. And, you know, it was all happening quite quickly. It was, you know, madness. And I was like, if I get this, I'm not going to, you know, have any time off until, you know, Kingdom Come. So I booked myself some flights to Barcelona to have a holiday. So on the last day of my holiday, I was trying not to think about it. And on the last day of my holiday, something told me to turn on my phone. I was basically, I had the phone off most of the time because I didn't want to think about it. So I turned my phone on and I had a missed call from my agent and I was like, oh, I should call them back. So I was sat on the rooftop of the hotel in Barcelona. I think it's maybe like midday, 1 o'clock, something like that. And we have this conversation and he tells me that I've got the job. And I let out the biggest scream and everyone looked at me and I was like, I'm so sorry. It was, I couldn't compute it. I could not believe it. Every single fiber of my being just wanted to cry. It just didn't feel real. I didn't believe it. It was madness. And the thing is, the friend that I was with on holiday had flown out. She'd flown home earlier, so I was by myself at this point. And I was like, "I'm gonna have I'm gonna have to buy myself a drink."
I hope it was a good one.
I think I did. I think I bought myself a glass of champagne or something. I was like, "I must celebrate." Oh, yeah. And then I had this secret inside of me for so long. And you know, anyone that knows me knows I'm so terrible at keeping secrets anyway. But, and then a couple of people had known that I was auditioning for it, because I had to slip off to London a couple of times. And so they were like, oh, what happened? I was like, oh, I've just not heard back, you know, but these things can take some time. So I'm not really stressed about it. I was just like really, really playing it down. And yeah, so it was a lot to keep in. And then obviously I went for the costume fitting and again, lost my mind putting on all of the clothes. Honestly, it was just the most incredible whirlwind. But then again, it was so far away. Do you know what I mean? Like I knew that I was going to be starting in January, but there was so much to happen. I still had, you know, a fair few weeks of Avenue Q left, and then I had 2 months of Panto left and before I'd get to be part of this incredible show. So I was very, very excited, but yeah, there was a lot happening.
I know. And then I saw you the day before your first show. We went to that Stephen Schwartz concert at the Park Theatre, and we did. The gods sat us next to each other. And I was like, oh my God, you're taking him as book tomorrow at Wicked. I was like, don't talk, don't do anything. But you were fine. You seemed really chilled that day. Were you freaking out secretly? Or at this point, you're like, I've done my rehearsals, I'm okay, I've got this.
No, I was calm. I actually was genuinely quite calm because obviously we've established I knew the show inside out anyway. I mean, granted, yes. Not Bob's part.
You didn't need a rehearsal period.
I knew Elphaba's part inside out. but, you know, I was very, very familiar with the show. I had 2 weeks of rehearsals, which obviously I did on Woman before, so I kind of knew how it was going to go. Hannah, Toy and Petra, who is the who are the choreographer and director for London, were so wonderful with me and... You know, and Adam, the musical director, just they know their stuff inside out. They knew exactly what they needed me to do. And you know, it was just such an easy process. There was a little hiccup, which was that I dislocated my shoulder on like the third or fourth day of rehearsals.
Right.
So we backtrack a little bit because obviously, like we've established, I've not had a day off since 1933. And so I was
you're looking good for it.
Thank you so much. This is my skincare regime. So I'd not had a day off in such a long time, and I was actually auditioning for another show whilst doing Cinderella, which is madness. So on my days off from Cinderella, I was coming into London to audition for another show, and then on the days that I wasn't auditioning for that, I was coming into London to do vocal calls for Wicked. So
gosh, what is this life?
It was mental, and I talked to a couple of my friends about it, and I was like am I crazy trying to do all of this? And they were like, you just gotta, you know, roll with it. So roll with it. Yeah. I did. So I dislocated my shoulder, and then, you know, I'm lying on the floor with this shoulder hanging out of the socket, and I'm like, I'm not going to get to being Wicked. So, anyway, the shoulder popped itself back in, and my out of performing on and off job is working at a physio centre. So the first thing I did was, nice. You know, direct dial all of my physio friends and was like, please someone see me tonight. And I was crazy. I refused to leave the rehearsal that day, though. Everyone was like, should we stop rehearsals for the day? And I was like, no, I'm not leaving. I refuse to go. A couple of the swings came in the afternoon, and they were like, why is he not pushing the wheelchair? Like, why? What's happening? And someone was like, oh, he dislocated his shoulder earlier. And they're like, why is he still here? And I was like, he wouldn't leave. So at this point, everyone's like, this guy is crazy. And crazy I was, and thankfully with the help of a shoulder specialist and my wonderful physios at Physio Ed, I was able to make my opening night, which again, the high stress was that, you know, I had about 40 people coming booked for that Monday night, and I was like, I must do the show. But I felt really, really, you know, comfortable with it, and you know, everyone that was kind of surrounding me at that time was saying, you've got this, like, you're so far ahead. I think, to be fair, by the end of the first week, I'd essentially learnt the entirety of the show. I think we did a run of the show on the Friday in the studio. So then the second week was literally just about going back, finessing and stuff like that. So we were in a really good place. So I think that's why I was calm when we sat next to each other at the show.
And then did those next few weeks when you were doing it, were you taking it in, were you enjoying it, was it living up to those expectations of all, you know, all these times you'd watched it, and then, you know, imagining what it's like to be a part of, were you living your best life?
I really, really, really was. I would kind of, you know, it was everything I wanted and more. You know, everyone's kind of behind the cloth at the start of the show, and, you know, the orchestra start to play, and, you know, that I've heard that music so many times, and it felt so surreal that, you know, I was there and I was in a costume and I was in the show, and, you know, and it was happening, and we did it, and I did the first show, and it was great. And, you know, I was obviously, you know, not perfect. You're not going to be perfect on the first time, but, you know, I was having a lovely old time, and, you know, I got about 7 weeks in, until, you know, Corona hit, And mm-hmm. there we are.
Yes, I know. Crazy. It's, yeah, ridiculous. But you obviously are third cover Elphaba, right?
Well, I mean, we don't say it out loud, but I feel like we all know. And, you know, I do make a conscious effort to stand in the wing and, you know, just check in on what Laura's doing from show to show, just so that I'm up to date with all the choreo.
So if you like had to go on tomorrow, have you got, do you know what notes are going to come out? Do you know what are you going to shake anything up? You got the riffs planned? What's happening?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, but I've been practicing those for years. I've got so many.
What are your signature
versions.
I want to know what your signature riffs are.
Oh my god. Do you know what, you'll just have to wait and see them live.
Thank you so much for doing this. This has been incredible. I feel like this is nonstop. It's so amazing to hear, like, you've squeezed in so many things and really in not a very long space of time.
Well, do you know what? You know what they say? You can sleep when you're dead. So, you know, there we go. That's my motto. I've not slept in weeks, years.
Mm. Yeah. Last question, though. Tell me, give me your lockdown cocktail recommendations. If people want to get creative in their kitchen, what should they be doing, or where should they be ordering it from?
Well, let me tell you a story. I was lucky enough to win a competition with the team at Cocktail Porter, who do these fantastic cocktail boxes. So I am now getting a free cocktail box once a month for the next year.
What?
I know, it's so exciting.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. But I am going to embrace it. So I've had my first box, which was the Elderflower Spritz, I think it's called, which is one of my favorite cocktails anyway. You know, it's Prosecco, soda water, elderflower liqueur, mint and lime. It's always a winner. Wow. But the cocktail that I've been making the most in lockdown is called a Picante, which is basically like a margarita. It's tequila and lime and a red chili pepper. And it's my favorite. It's a winner. Absolute winner.
Okay, I need to get on that.
Don't, absolutely.
Thank you so much for doing this. I can't wait. I know when this creative time is over, I know you'll be back on it and jumping from crazy amazing project to crazy amazing project. And I can't wait to come and see you when you go on as Elphaba.
Please, please do. I will definitely let you know. You know, I might not be able to put it on the socials, but I'll definitely let you know.
Thank you so much, Nick.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much to Nick for taking time out to record this episode of In the Frame. I need to get in the kitchen and start making some cocktails. He's inspired me. And remember, everyone, if you want to smash an acting assignment, just whip out With You from Ghost, rehearse it as a monologue, and you are guaranteed to top the class. Nick McLean said so. If you enjoyed this episode of In the Frame, please hit that subscribe button, and also it'd be amazing if you could leave a cheeky little Apple Podcast rating and review. Make sure you check out our other podcast, The West End Frame Show, to stay up to date with everything going on in theatre land. And you can find West End Frame on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. I'll be back next week with Broadway's Josh Lehman, who once upon a time also played Bok, actually. He played Bok in Wicked's US tour. But most recently, he starred in one of my favourite shows, The Prom. And it's such a good episode. One of the most honest and also one of the funniest episodes ever. I will be back with Josh next week.